come in the second part of Outlook. It's cheap goods out, antiques in. The two brothers who don't always see eye to eye when it comes to improving the fortunes of India's oldest auction house.
That's why you're starting to motivate them. They're selling in a place here, selling shoes and socks. What do you expect them to become? Stop talking about socks and shoes. Try to get it inside your pretty head. You don't sell socks and shoes.
We'll meet the brothers in calmer mood after the latest news.
BBC News with Natalia Ralston. The Iraqi government has formally requested air power support from the United States in its battle with Sunni jihadists. America's top military commander confirmed the Iraqi request, but did not say whether the U.S. would act on it. As Sunni jihadists continue their offensive in Iraq, reports suggest they may have seized the country's biggest oil refinery. Officials and workers at the refinery in Beijing say the militants are now in control after an overnight attack, but the security forces deny this. An 89-year-old man is being held in custody in the United States over the murders of hundreds of thousands of Jewish men, women, and children during the Second World War. Johann Breyer is accused of serving as a Nazi SS guard at the Auschwitz and Buchenwald concentration camps. Germany, which issued the arrest warrant for Mr. Breyer, is seeking his extradition. He said he did work at Auschwitz, but not voluntarily. Reports from Nigeria say about 100 people are feared drowned in a remote part of the northeast. One eyewitness told the BBC the victims had boarded a boat to try to escape from gunmen who attacked a village setting fire to homes. The World Health Organization has reported a sharp increase in the number of people dying from Ebola disease in West Africa. According to the latest figures, nearly 100 people died in the past week in the three worst affected countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. King Juan Carlos of Spain, who helped steer his country towards democracy after the death of the dictator General Franco, has signed an act of parliament formalising his own abdication. His son Felipe will become the new monarch. In the Football World Cup, Spain, the team that has dominated international football for the last 6 years, has been knocked out of the tournament after only two matches. Spain were beaten by Chile 2-0. Earlier, the Dutch beat Australia 3-2. BBC News.
You're with Outlook from the BBC. I'm Matthew Bannister. Coming up in this half hour, we visit the utopian city designed by the late president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez.
Chavez traveled through here once, and he had a vision. He said, "We're going to build a city over here." Many people told him, "This is crazy. How are we going to make this happen?" But Chavez, in his madness, made it a reality.
More on that story later, but before that, Anwar and Arshad Salim are two brothers from Calcutta whose family has owned India's oldest auction house, the Russell Exchange, since 1940. The place is steeped in history and has become something of an institution, but over the years it's struggled to survive. After working in the UK for 40 years, older brother Anwar has recently returned to Calcutta to help Arshad revive the business. Their efforts are the subject of a new documentary film called The Auction House, A Tale of Two Brothers. When the brothers came into the Outlook studio, Anwar told me about his memories of growing up around the Russell Exchange in the 1950s.
As a child, from school I used to go to the Russell Exchange. Just pop in, basically my father taking us out for coffee, tea in the evening. And then gradually I got involved. I was actually cataloging. I was putting lot numbers on the items.
I've got a sense of a place piled high with different items folded together. Is that right?
You're quite right. Furniture piled high.
Arshad, tell me about it in its heyday when it was under your father's control.
In those years, that was supposed to be the gold rush period because there were so many embassies in Calcutta and the business was blooming, absolutely.
And what was the nature of the auction house in those days? Just describe the kind of business that was done.
It was doing very good business and we had all sort of nice customers, very elite sort of customers who used to really like and understand the things that they were buying.
What sort of things were you selling to them?
We were selling crystal, very, very good porcelain, very good wooden furniture, and cutlery and crockery and all these sort of things.
And what was it like to be a child and involved in that business?
At that time, It was very nice to be the youngest auctioneer rather in India.
Really?
I started my first auctioning at the age of 17. My father guided me.
It's a mystery to me how auctions work. I've been to auctions and I've seen them, but it's always struck me as being an art form to be a good auctioneer. What do you do that makes you a good auctioneer?
You have got to be a very good valuer first. The auctioneer knows the valuation, then he can raise the price, and he can start the base price with what he thinks is the best.
200 rupees for the documents, only 300 rupees, lot number 255, a metal ash pole, one metal stand, and one metal chair.
And what you're hoping for, surely, is that people get a bit carried away by the excitement of your auction and pay more than they were hoping to pay.
That is also good. Because one has to tempt them to.
Now, gentlemen, this must be a very, very old piece. It has got a historical value behind it. Give me a good offer. Anybody?
So you're a bit of a showman.
You have to be a showman. People buy things in an auction which they have no need for. And sometimes they pay much more. Because if there's an opposite bidder, there's a lot of ego. So they want to outbid one another. That's where the auctioneer's expertise comes into play.
So you headed off, Anwar, to the UK to develop your life. And so you, Arshad, were left with the business. Did it fall on hard times? Did you have difficulties as the years went by?
My father had trained me very well. In the beginning, after he died, I had a bit of problems with my staff and everybody. They thinking me to be a new person there. But I had my way. Really, I didn't have much difficulty because my brother used to guide me always from England.
So you sent advice over to from England?
Oh, yes. I've always been very dominating.
So I knew what was happening. And then you decided to go back. Anwar, how had the business changed from your father's day?
For want of a better word, it had gone down market, and we had to bring it back to its glory again.
What sort of down market things were being sold at the auction house?
From socks, anything upwards.
Socks? Yes.
And so the clientele was a big mix. And I wanted to change the clientele, get it back to its heyday.
Right, but hang on a second. How had you ended up selling socks from this wonderful auction house selling high-end antique furniture to the diplomats that your father had set up? How, Arshad, had you ended up selling socks?
No, we didn't end up selling socks. Our motto was that we sell everything, right from a pair of socks to anything.
Right, so you were selling electrical equipment?
Everything of this.
All sorts of things. But were you worried it had gone too far down market as well, or was that just your brother's view?
My view was that I was feeling proud. If you can bring me a pair of socks, I can sell that also.
Right, you thought you could sell anything?
Anything.
Right, so was there a bit of an argument when your brother came back?
Oh, yes, there was a very...
But they're harsh words.
But a healthy argument, of course.
A healthy argument, right.
Why do you keep insisting on shoes and clothes?
I just don't understand.
No, it is...
You have great pleasure in saying
that you are selling shoes and socks. For God's sake, I would have that. That's why your staff is motivated. They are sitting in a place here, selling shoes and socks. What do you expect them to do?
Did you encounter some opposition from your brother when you came and said we're going to go up market?
Initially, there was polite resistance.
And then not so polite.
And then not so polite resistance.
Try to get it inside your pretty head. You don't sell socks and shoes. These are similes. You still don't understand.
So I had to be more patient. But I'm very pleased that they've come round to what I was saying. And now we have got back almost 60% of the clientele.
How did you do that? How do you band the socks and the electrical bric-a-brac?
Well, the way I've done it is I've raised the commission we charge. So automatically that filtered away.
So that filters out the people who have only got small items to sell.
Absolutely.
Right. So what sort of thing would I buy there? What would the atmosphere be if I came there today?
On the furniture side, we've got good Burma teak, old furniture, good mahogany furniture. It's about 300 to 400 lots every Sunday.
And who are the new customers? Who have you managed to attract to come back to the auction house?
We have the film industry who have got money, their backs, top industrialists and the bureaucrats, and, if I may say, politicians. That's where all the money is.
So, in a way, it's a Calcutta institution, and you've breathed life back into it.
It is a Calcutta institution, absolutely. It's an Indian institution located in Calcutta.
What would your father think of the auction house today, do you think?
I think he'll be very proud. I think he'll be very proud.
You've recaptured his spirit.
Almost, I would say. We still have some more work to do, but we are almost there.
1,100, 1,400, 2,000 rupees last time.
Anwar and Arshad Saleem, the brothers reviving India's oldest auction house. Now, this year has seen strong anti-government protests in Venezuela. Since early February, protesters have taken to the streets to demonstrate against high inflation rates and shortages of food staples. But for a large part of the population, the government remains popular. And one of the places where the support is strongest is the city of Ciudad Caribia. The city was conceived as a utopian socialist city by the late President Hugo Chavez. It was built to plans he drew up himself and handed over to the thousands made homeless by the floods of 2010. For Outlook, Irene Casali visited the city and met one of its residents, Margarita Fornica.
It all happened because of the rains. I lived in a rented house with my five children and my husband. I remember it was stone on the 3rd of November 2010 when the landslide happened. It hit the house next door and came into our kitchen where we had everything. We lost the fridge, the kitchen, all the things I had managed to buy with the redundancy money from our previous job. But I guess the most important thing is that we survived. Margarita's family was one of thousands left homeless after the 2010 floods, during which more than 20 people died. Some remain homeless today. But Margarita was lucky. After spending 9 months in different shelters, she was given a flat in Ciudad Caribia. At first, I had no idea what Ciudad Caribia was. Several years before, my husband had worked there, transporting construction material to the site. He used to say, "It must be for rich people because it looks really nice." Imagine our surprise. We got to live here. On the 26th of August 2011, we arrived. The children were so excited. I'd never had a home before. My mom died when I was little. She didn't have a home. So getting to own a home was incredible.
We're walking towards Margarita's house. It's on a first floor. And here we are. We're coming into a spacious living room with a window and a balcony to the left. And here on the other side, there's the kitchen. And Margarita, show me the way.
Sí, bueno, aquí tenemos el baño principal.
So this way, there's the bathroom to the left.
El baño de mis dos niños, de Genesis y demás.
So here, there's the first bedroom to the right for the two girls.
Ajá, y el cuarto de mis tres varones.
And here's the bedroom for the three boys. Uh-huh. It's just next to the girls' bedroom. And here, to the very end.
Sí, mi cuarto matrimonial, el de mi esposo para mí.
It's Margarita's bedroom. There's a double bed for her and her husband, and an ensuite bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Margarita's favorite bit of the house. From the window, we can see towards the sea. Right now, it's a bit cloudy, but every morning when Margarita wakes up, she has a great view of the sea just over the mountains here in the city. And she can also see the part of the city that is still being built to her left. Ciudad Caribia was dreamed up by the late President Hugo Chavez as a utopian socialist city, the first of many he hoped to build. Its location just outside the capital city, Caracas, was entirely down to chance.
Chavez viajó aquí en estas montañas y el helicóptero presentó fallas.
Chavez traveled through here once, and his helicopter broke down. So he was here on the mountain, and he had a vision. He said, "We're going to build a city over here." And he started drawing it. There's going to be an industrial area, a health center, a school, a university. It has to have everything.
Chavez está loco.
Many people told him, this is crazy, how are we going to make this happen? How can we bring all those services to this mountain? But Chavez, in his madness, made it a reality. This is why we love Chavez.